We know that this is not everybody's cup of tea, and that's fine. But find the thing that is and double down on it. That's the thing that has helped me, and I know that that is the one winning strategy that you can take in any given situation.
From Tuple, this is Distributed, where we show how world-class engineers and their teams tackle the challenges of remote work. I'm Jack Hanna, your host. Hey, everyone. Today, we're talking with James Simone, who's a principal engineer at Salesforce, where he's worked for the past 4 years. James actually stumbled into programming, having a background in finance previously, where a series of sort of weird circumstances led him to running a software team. And he now has 11 plus years of software experience, having quickly risen through the ranks to reach that principal level. So in today's conversation, we're going to dig into his personal background, how he thinks about remote work, particularly as a member of Salesforce Agile organization, as well as collaborative programming, which I understand is near and dear to James's heart. So James, we're psyched to have you on.
It's good to be here.
What are you most proud of professionally, James?
I would say that I am most proud of working on a distributed engineering team. And that's something that makes me excited about coming into work every day. It's not just about what I'm learning and the things that I'm doing, but about what a group of people are doing and learning. I really subscribe to the phrase, the sum is greater than the whole of its parts when it comes to this work and this style of doing work. I worked as a consultant. I owned my own business for a little bit at the start of the pandemic. Working by yourself can be a lot of fun, and it's very empowering in a different way, in the sense that everything lies on you. You get quick and immediate feedback. I'm a huge proponent of test-driven development, so I have a pair partner in that sense. I'm not just pushing straight to prod, testing in production. And what I've always found in the experiences working solo that I've had over the years is that it's not just a safety net that you get when you work with other people. You get built-in community. You get the ability to see and empower other people to level up in their own careers, and they're doing the same to you. So that kind of force multiplier effect, I'm not sitting here thinking to myself like, how am I going to empower my coworkers today? It's like we are all going into this video call that we're on all day. And I think we're all on the same page in this respect, that we're there to learn from each other. And that happens for sure every day. And we have it in our team agreements, for example, which is a living written document that we revise at least once a year, that levity should be part of the process.
So Salesforce, it's a massive public company. You're part of the Agile organization, as I understand it. Could you help me and the audience understand what that means before we get into some of these specifics?
Salesforce has over 2,000 engineering teams globally, all working for the most part independently. There's a lot of potential and possibilities for teams to be dependent on each other to do the work that they do. But in the absence of that, the Agile org is there to help teams do the work that they need to do to glue everything together to deliver more faster with better quality. And so the group of people that I work with are primarily coaches that are embedded on these teams, embedded at the executive leadership level on down to individual teams, working with them to understand, analyze their own metrics, work in sprints or Kanban style, taking things out of a backlog, right? And applying that idea of continuous integration to learning to further improve and increase agility over time.
Are there some specific projects you can share that you've worked on to sort of put this all hypothetical stuff into context?
Absolutely. If I go back to the beginning, the basis for the work that my team does, which is building internal tools that are used by all of these engineering teams, starts with measuring happiness and productivity. And those two things we find are actually fairly closely related to one another. So as an example, we maintained a suite of tools used to measure developer happiness either during a sprint retrospective, during an ongoing basis throughout the work that they're doing, because not every team works with sprints, right? Fixed unit of time in terms of committing to work to be done. But regardless of how they choose to self-organize and commit to the work that they do, they have the ability to check in and look at a list of questions that can be customized down to an individual team level that they all agree that they want to answer, and use those as a process for checking in. So a tool like that is the foundation by which some of these metrics are built. Some of the other metrics that we're measuring are probably more obvious in terms of how many items are individual teams completing on a given week. How many items do they commit to but actually have fall over into the next sprint, next week, however many days or iterations it is. And we use those things to build up a holistic picture at a division, org, company level as we continue to zoom out on the health of various teams, the teams of teams that are working together within the organization.
What do you actually do with the output of those metrics and that analysis?
I think it really depends on the role that you are in, because at an individual contributor level, you use that data to start conversations with your team. You might, for example, as one of the products that we work on, receive a weekly digest summarizing and generating insights and actions for your team. Possible retrospective items, things that you're doing well, things that you might want to take a look at. We get these digests for our team, and it's a continual weekly point of discussion for us. Do we agree with this? Do we not? Do we need to change the code that's generating this stuff to make ourselves look better? We've never done that. But it's such an interesting thing that at an IC level allows us to have a conversation about our team's performance and what we're doing well. In general, one of the things that we're going to spend a lot of time talking about is the value of reflection, because I think when you revisit things, that's when you really start to see areas for improvement. But if you're operating at a engineering manager level, at a engineering leader level, at a C-suite level, you're probably looking at these digests, for example, in a slightly different way, right? You can get insights and actions, for example, at a much more aggregated level and start to look at, okay, what are the teams that need to spend more time talking to each other? Where are they blocked? What are they doing well? You know, what deserves to be celebrated? And what is looking like the first signs of burnout or something? It really depends on the role that you have in the organization when you start to think about what it means to you. But what I love so much about that particular suite of applications, for example, is that it really inspires conversation.
Got it. So what I'm hearing you say is this, like, this reflection, this process of thinking what we could do differently seems to correlate strongly with folks who both feel productive and happy at work. Is that the way to interpret what you said?
It's one particular interpretation. It happens to be mine. I have certainly found that to be hugely empowering. There's so many different ways to slice it. So I hesitate to say, like, oh yeah, this is the steel thread. This is the red line that comes through. But for me, it is, for sure.
I'm wondering, are there any particular rituals, habits, practices that your team has developed over the years that you feel like have really helped you work effectively together and feel happy and productive at work?
My answer to that is measured approach to collaborative programming. We spend at least 4 days a week on a video call for 7 hours a day. We found after about a year of having been in this modality that the 5 days of collaborative programming a week was really starting to drag. It was hard to find the time to do the other things that we needed to do, whether it was individual contributions to open source repositories, just administrative work for our own jobs. So we actually scaled that back and we take a day for ourselves now. Depending on where we are at in terms of our commitments, we may scale it back even further, especially if members of the team have prior commitments and responsibilities like this one, right? And we're all trying to go out there and find different ways to make an impact in the community as well as doing our day jobs. And I think that period and that chance to also have your own time is actually a hugely powerful part of the process.
Yeah. It's funny hearing you justify why you're only spending 4 days a week, 7 hours a day, collaborative programming, when so many people out there have either never done it before, or if they do it, they do it like an hour a week. And so I'm just sort of laughing to myself hearing you say, you know, it's 4 days a week, 7 hours a day. And, you know, we just had to pare it back. It was just like slightly too much. It's like, yeah.
We love each other. I think that's what it comes down to. We love each other so much that we let each other have their own time too, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's good. I want to get a little bit tactical here for a second to better understand how exactly that time is spent. And so let's say it's Monday morning, for example. Is the first thing that you're doing jumping on a call with everybody together? Give me the breakdown. How does the week start given the structure?
On a Monday, we're going to start off talking to each other about how our weekends went, right? We're going to try to refresh our own memory about what the heck we were doing last week on Friday. When we are in a really good groove and we're working the way that we love to work, we've got failing tests to come back to refresh our own memories. But if we're doing more spike-based or POC work and the output of the thing that we're working on is documentation or something, it's going to take a little bit more time, right, to get up to speed. And then we just get into it. We start doing what we refer to as ensemble or mob programming. And we practice doing quick incremental handoffs with each other. We typically have one person driving, so to speak. So hands on the keyboard, typing. One person navigating, and then the peanut gallery, fully heckling for 15-minute increments at a time, after which we hand off, we commit our work, we push it up, next person pulls, takes over, and we do that all day.
How big is the team that's doing that? How many folks are there?
It depends. We have had as many as 7 engineers doing that at any given time. At the moment, we have 4. We also have a bunch of other teammates that are in the room. We've got our engineering manager for the most part. We've got our product owner. We've got a couple people from different teams that pop in and out as relates to the tools that they work on whenever they can. We really try to foster an open environment where we're like broadcasting out. We are on this call. Anybody can join at any time. It's been a really good time.
And then the rotation time, 15 minutes, does that change based on the number of participants you have in the rotation?
Yes. And when we move down to a strict pair, we tend to up the time amount between handoffs. It's, for whatever reason, easier that way. I like to follow the dictum set forth by Ralph Waldo Emerson. A foolish inconsistency is the hobgoblin of little minds. We're not trying to play by a very strict set of definitions, you know, and I think that the one thing that we have learned that is really interesting when I compare it to my past lives, so to speak, with paired programming is those faster handoffs and the 15-minute increment is like the real sweet spot between being able to get something on the page, iterating on it a little bit, and then moving on to the next person and letting people express themselves. Whereas when we first started, we were trying to do like hour-long increments of work. And we found it to be hugely draining. And I laugh now thinking about that because my original team, where I also was doing ensemble programming before that was even really a thing that Woody's Wheel was talking about and talking to other people about calling it that, we would have somebody driving all day. And like I both loved and hated those days, you know. This smaller time frame really does help, I think, with both keeping people fresh and keeping people honest about not trying to veer off the rails too much.
It seems like there's that inverse relationship between the amount of time of the rotation and the size of the group, right? Like the bigger the group is, the smaller the rotation time you want. I mean, I've heard Llewellyn Falco and even Jeff Langer, he talks about doing 3-minute rotations. And, you know, a lot of folks feel like, hey, more than 20 minutes per cycle between you being in any given role is too long. And so it's cool hearing you talk about 15 is the sweet spot that you've experimented with and aligned to, because I think for a lot of folks who do ensemble super religiously end up at actually even a shorter rotation than that.
It would be interesting to experiment again with the times. I'm not trying to say like, oh yeah, we definitely nailed it, right? Like that's just something that we have aligned to over the years, but it's working pretty well. So that hasn't come up as the Kaizen item yet, but I'd be interested. Maybe I'll be the one to propose it in this next sprint.
We've sort of taken it as a given that collaborative programming is a good thing. One of the common arguments in favor of these types of practices is the idea that because you have multiple sets of eyes in the process of developing the code, you don't actually need a formal code review or PR process. I happen to know that is firmly not your belief. And so I'd like to unpack that more. Please, like, represent your perspective on why you are both in favor of collaborative programming and in favor of PR review.
It's funny. I was listening to your interview with Dave Farley this morning, and there's so many things that I love that he says. And then we get to that point, and I'm like, oh man, come on, Dave. To me, it's not a selling point. And I say that because I firmly believe that when we take the time to do a review, we're putting on a different hat. We're coming at a problem from a different angle. When I write code, I am so invested in doing the right thing up front that the idea that I could do something wrong is almost inconceivable, even though that happens every day, every hour, every second that I'm at the keyboard, right? And I find that even as much as I try to clean stuff up before I go to do a formal comparison using my source code review mechanism of choice, insert product here, it is astounding to me. I have never done a review on code that I've written or somebody else has written and not found something to think about, to pluck out, to start a conversation with. I'm not talking about like nits. I'm talking about like, ooh, this looks like an interesting pattern. We've got something that looks like this pattern somewhere else. Is this an object waiting to be born? Is this an abstraction that we should spend more time thinking about? I'm talking about like these big ideas that come out of conversations that for whatever reason, when I'm wearing the hat of author of the code, it's not there. When I put on the hat of reviewing the code, I'm looking at it and I'm like, oh man, I'm seeing this from a totally different perspective. But I also think that maybe it's the sort of review that I'm talking about that sheds some additional nuance on it, because we as a team also review the code together. It's not an async process. It's not something where we're making a pull request and then somebody is going to go off and go through the files or like start a conversation, tag different people in it. We do it live on that same call.
I was going to ask, well, why don't you just make that a section of that 7-hour experience? And it sounds like how it manifests. It's the same people basically who are involved in the process of writing code, who review the code, and it's not a asynchronous separated process. Am I understanding that right?
That's correct.
So you're not really losing the time to the asynchronous back and forth or losing the quality benefit of risking somebody saying, looks good to me.
Yeah. There's no LGTM force push to me. And it's all taking a measured approach together. There's really something about looking at changes together that also sparks these really interesting and powerful conversations.
How do you make that psychological transition from author to reviewer? Do you have any rituals or processes by which you say, okay, we've written this and now we are going to enter the mind state of reviewing it?
For us, and this dovetails nicely, I think, back to something that we were talking about before, which is what do you actually do, or like what is your team actually measuring? Salesforce as a company has teams fill out for themselves what done means to them. What does done mean to your team? This is also part of the working agreements thing. There's this whole section of things that you have to at least on paper say that you have agreed to as a team. And one of them is your definition of done. Now, I would hazard to guess that there's probably not that many actual differences between different teams' definitions, but it's important because it's something that everybody agrees to and that you are supposed to revise with the entrance or exit of any team member. Those inflection points in that document really helps people to then think about, are we done with this? Are we ready to review it? That's what we use. That's how we start the process of thinking about, are we ready to squash this stuff? Are we ready to start looking at it with a different lens? That's how we frame the conversation.
Then you transition immediately to, okay, now let's do it. If the answer is yes, then sweet, let's jump into it.
Yeah, and sometimes the answer is no. Sometimes we decide as a team, you know what? We dropped the ball on this. We've identified new requirements. This happens a lot with test-driven development, I think, in general, where as you're writing the tests, you start to find these interesting edge cases in the thing that you agreed to produce. And I love that. I love the process, A, of discovering that, and B, of deciding whether or not those edge cases are meaningful, whether or not they themselves need to be represented in a test, whether they need to be given life, you know, Schrodinger's cat style. Like, are we going to open this and find something, or are we going to say, you know what, actually, it doesn't exist at all. There's no way that could actually happen in production. I love those conversations because the strongly typed sense of the word gives a representation to abstractions that are summarized by business logic. And some whole classes of bugs are, like compile time safety, eliminated by the decision that there's absolutely no possible way that this could happen. And other things you think about and you're like, oh, not only could this happen, but it's also a problem in another place. And now that we've thought about this, we actually need to go and revisit that as well, because we've discovered a whole new class of bugs that we hadn't considered, you know?
When you're having those conversations, do you do anything to capture both the questions and the answers to them so that when you're going back to that set of code or to that area of the code base, you can remember what those decisions were? I'm wondering if you have any process around that.
We've experimented in the past with using things like architectural decision records, that whole framework. Increasingly, the answer is yes. I am finding it more and more valuable as we have started to work with more and more teams to have a process by which we are formally going through and showing what we've talked about, whether that's some kind of architectural diagram. I think the closest that you can get is comments in the code. That's like the best place for you to be able to describe something that looks weird. And my favorite comments are, in fact, the legend on the map, so to speak, where otherwise I would find myself raising an eyebrow. So those are the places that it's ideal. That's not always possible or the best place when you're talking about working with thousands of different teams. So the mechanism that we tend to choose is going to differ based on the audience that we're writing for. But increasingly, I have erred on the side of producing documentation alongside the code, because the code is sometimes not enough when there are that many eyes on it.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think one of the core benefits of collaborative programming is the fact that you reduce knowledge silos, because all of the people on that nuclear team are working on the same thing. Ideally, there's work in progress of one. So everybody has a shared understanding of that system, and folks can come and go much more easily because there's not individual keepers of the keys. The consequence of that, though, is if you are working with a bunch of different teams, the propensity to document maybe is lower because there's just baseline assumption that, oh, no, we all know it because we all made this decision together. And so I'm always curious how teams address that. And it sounds like y'all have a system around that, which is good. Because I think that question of documentation, what a good comment looks like, how to capture some of these decisions is one that folks never totally feel like they've mastered.
It's funny you should say it in those terms too, because we actually have a document that we refer to as our nascent coding standards. And at a certain point in the history of the team, we were like, well, you know, we've been working together for like 2 years with minimal changes. Maybe we should take the word nascent out of there. It feels appropriate. And we took it out. And like 3 months later, that was actually one of the Kaizen items in our retrospective. We were like, it feels like in rebranding the name of the document, we lost some of our drive to go back there. Keep it live. Let's bring nascent back into it. And it really has like continued to be a evergreen source of material for us in terms of trying to also document decisions like the ones that we just talked about. Like, what does it mean to write a good comment? What does it mean to write a bad comment? There's a lot of space in between those two poles. So it's helpful to have at least a little bit of a guide down for our opinion on that.
I'm looking at the clock and we are coming up on time faster than I expected. Before we wrap up, is there anything that we haven't covered yet as like a more meaningful topic that you feel like it would really be nice to talk about for a couple minutes?
I love the fact that you had Kent Beck on. And if I could say one thing, it's read this book, Test-Driven Development by Example. That was at the very beginning of my own programming journey, way back when I was stuck in the Rome airport on a long layover, and my mentor had given me that book. I read it 3 times back to back over the course of that experience. And in general, if I could say one thing, it's that in addition to strongly believing that collaborative working is the best possible way to produce software, coupling that with what I was talking about in terms of having these more refined periods for reflection is such a hugely empowering way to level up in your career, in the way that you approach building and designing software. I also am always trying to find the time to get new material and reflect on it. There's so many different ways to ingest information at this point. It can be overwhelming. And also, obviously, like we all have our own personal lives. I'm a big rock climber, runner. I love to take delight in the outdoors in a really meaningful way to me. So finding the right time to balance those things is also hugely important. But when it comes down to it, our abilities to up level in our careers is so dependent upon the ability to take in information, ingest it, and then reflect upon it.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you mentioned up-leveling in your career because you went from not having a background in software to principal engineer incredibly quickly. What do you attribute that to?
Everybody has their own preferred mechanism for learning. Mine happens to be reading. Like, I love to listen to podcasts. I love to watch videos too. But when I really go to deep dive on a topic, what I'm really looking for is great documentation or a compelling story. I've got Domain Modeling Made Functional on my desk, one of my favorite books that I've read recently in the programming sphere. When I really deep dive on something, it gives me the time to reflect on it too. I always find things to pluck out and apply to the code that I'm writing, and I'm constantly trying to refine those things. I've had the benefit and pleasure of working in a collaborative environment, as you said, almost my entire career. But when I look at the initial burst of learning that I had, so much of that came from working in an ensemble environment. And the fact that I now get to work on a team and have for the past 4 years at Salesforce that has strictly worked in that style, it has done so much for me and the people that I work with. And I love that I've also had the chance to mentor and empower them as well.
Do you think ensemble programming and collaborative programming is the reason you went from zero to principal so quickly?
Absolutely. I want to balance that by saying I don't think that this is the silver bullet. Like, one size definitely does not fit all. I was laughing at some of the discourse that you've been taking part in on LinkedIn recently on this topic, and you handle it so much better than I would given the circumstances. So kudos to you. But we know that this is not everybody's cup of tea, and that's fine. But find the thing that is and double down on it. That's the thing that has helped me, and I know that that is the one winning strategy that you can take in any given situation. Find something that you're good at, that you enjoy, make the most of it.
Excellent career advice. Well, James, thank you so much for being generous with your time and perspective. I've really enjoyed catching up with you here today. I will link to a couple of the things that you mentioned, including directly to your blog, because I prepared for this by reading a bunch of your articles, and I think you have a lot of really interesting things on your website. Are there any other places folks should go if they want to get in touch with you or learn more about your work?
They can go to my website, jamessimone.net. I love when people reach out. It's been truly awe-inspiring to be part of a global community, and there's nothing like waking up in the middle of the night to a notification that turns out to be from somebody sending in something. I'm happy to chat at any time, and it's great to see you again. It's been great to have this conversation. I cannot believe that the time went by this fast.
This went by the fastest, like by far. But with that, I just want to say, you know, James, thank you, and hope to talk to you again soon.
Thanks for joining us on Distributed. If you want to learn more about what we covered in this episode, or if you want to share your own thoughts, follow @Tupelonx or visit distributed.fm.